death certificates serve a very important legal purpose in the United States. The death certificate is the only legal proof that a person has died, and the state uses it to stop Social Security payments, pensions, and other benefits. Families use the death certificate to settle their affairs. Reporting of death began back at the dawn of the 20th century in 1900, and the information required on death certificates has helped monitor and reflect how society is changing. But there is also a vital role that death certificate information plays in public health. We're joined today by Dr. Robert Anderson, the Chief of Mortality Statistics at CDC's National Center for Health Statistics.
So data from the death certificate has guided public health policy for now over a century. Can you touch on a few historical examples of how this data has informed and guided public health over the years?
They've been used to surveil influenza mortality for quite a long time, and also to document and track deaths due to epidemics, including HIV, drug overdoses, and most recently, COVID-19.
This goes back to the beginning of the 20th century. So how is the information that's required on the death certificate, how has that changed over the years?
Well, every so often, the U.S. standard certificate of death is revised. And this is a guidance document that is produced in collaboration with state vital registration offices to sort of standardize the information on the death certificate. And there have been changes over time. The cause of death section was revised some 60, 70 years ago to elicit a more useful underlying cause of death. We've had additions to information on race and Hispanic origin that have been added over time. Most of the other demographic information is pretty well stayed the same from the beginning, but the overall content of the death certificate has shifted, slightly over time to give us additional information that's useful to us from a public health standpoint. And of course, we've been better able to retain information as we moved into the electronic age and as storage of data has improved and gotten cheaper, we've been able to retain more information than we were able to in the past.
So for those who aren't familiar with the process, could you sort of walk through that from the moment a person dies to the end point when NCHS actually publishes analysis of the death certificate data? Could you sort of walk us through what happens?
Yeah, when a person dies, state laws require that a death certificate be completed and registered. And typically, a funeral director starts the record and provides personal and demographic information about the decedent. Then a physician, medical examiner, or coroner, depending on the circumstances, provides the cause of death information. Now, in most cases these days, this is done electronically using an electronic death registration system. Most states have these electronic systems. And in those states, most of the records are filed and registered electronically. Now, once the death is registered with the state, the statistical information from the death certificate is then sent to NCHS, where it's incorporated into the national data file. National statistics are then generated from that data file, and then the data and statistical reports are released to the public when they're all ready to go.
So the people who actually fill out the death certificates, these are doctors, medical examiners, coroners, they're trained to follow certain steps when they fill out the certs. Can you explain a little bit about the steps they're supposed to follow?
Sure. Yeah. The physicians, medical examiners, and coroners, they're the ones that that provide the cause of death information. So the funeral directors typically provide the demographic information, and that's generally straightforward. The cause of death, however, is not as straightforward. The death certificate is really designed to elicit an underlying cause of death. And the underlying cause of death is defined as the disease or injury that started the chain of events leading to death. And this is considered to be the most useful information from a public health standpoint. The idea is if we can prevent the underlying cause, then we can stop that chain of events from happening altogether. So the physician, medical examiner, or coroner, and the physicians will typically certify the cause of death when the cause is natural. Medical examiners and coroners typically handle injury-related deaths, or suspicious deaths, or deaths where the decedent wasn't attended by a physician. So these folks are instructed to report a causal sequence, beginning with the immediate cause and then working back to an underlying cause. So, for example, we might see a chain of events such as acute respiratory distress due to chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So acute respiratory distress would be the immediate cause of death, and then the COPD, the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, would be the underlying cause of death. So the idea is that COPD caused the acute respiratory distress, which caused death. And so the main focus is going to be on that COPD rather than the acute respiratory distress, because we want to get at that underlying cause. The certifier is also asked to include any other conditions or diseases that may have contributed to death but weren't part of that causal sequence.
What happens in the instance if the certifiers cut corners or kind of fill out the death certificate quickly and maybe leave out certain things? How does that impact the data?
Well, I mean, there are really two issues that we see with cause of death certification, two main issues. Sometimes certifiers leave out the underlying cause, and sometimes they will provide an underlying cause but not provide sufficient details. So, for example, we see sometimes acute kidney failure as the cause of death. There are a lot of other causes of death that would be applicable here, but acute kidney failure is, I think, illustrative. You know, in most cases, I mean, this is probably not incorrect. The decedent may very well have died from acute kidney failure, but it's not really enough information. Acute kidney failure is typically caused by something else, and we need to know what that underlying cause was. Was it diabetes, an infection, high blood pressure, or some specific disease affecting the kidney? I mean, there are a bunch of things that can cause acute kidney failure. We need to know that information. We need to know what that underlying cause was, because that's what we want to focus on from a public health standpoint.
Is there anything that can be done when this sort of thing turns up? I mean, is there any follow-up, or is it once it's complete, basically, that's what we have to deal with?
Well, unfortunately, once it's complete, that's generally what we have to deal with. In an ideal world, all death certificates get reviewed by an expert, and information is corrected or added as appropriate. Unfortunately, resources are such that's not a practical solution. So very often we just have to deal with what's given to us. We also deal with this issue where the underlying cause may be provided, but we don't get sufficient detail. And drug overdoses provide a good example of where the lack of sufficient detail is a problem. In these cases, sometimes we'll simply see just drug overdose or multi-drug toxicity reported on the death certificate. And again, while this is probably not incorrect, we really need to know which drugs were involved. If all we get is drug overdose, we don't know was it heroin overdose, was it a fentanyl overdose, and knowing which drugs were involved helps us to better understand the nature of the public health problem that we're dealing with.
Usually when you have like a high profile person dying of an overdose, there's often a long period where they're waiting for the toxicology report. Is that restrict certifiers in getting details like that for the death certificate?
It really doesn't. In most instances, when a death investigation is required, it's going to take more than a few days. The cause of death can be certified pending investigation. And so that's typically the way these are handled, is the medical examiner or coroner, who will, they deal with the drug overdose deaths, They will file the death certificate with the cause and manner of death pending investigation. And then, so we will get actually that fact of death with the pending cause in a fairly timely manner. Then once the death investigation is done, the medical examiner coroner can go into the system and update the cause of death. That's actually the way they're supposed to do it. They go in, they amend the death certificate with the new cause of death information, and then that information is transmitted to us. So while we may get the fact of death in a very timely fashion for drug overdose deaths, we very often don't get the cause of death until maybe 3 to 6 months later.
So the data that NCHS ultimately publishes, that's coming from all the death certificates in the country that are recorded. It's not just a sample of death certificates like we would with a survey sample, for example. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we're not sampling data here. All deaths are required to be registered, and we collect all of these from the states for the national statistics. Now, that doesn't mean that when we publish information that we necessarily have all of them at that moment. We do publish some provisional data that are incomplete, but our final statistics are based on all deaths registered and sent to us by the states.
Before we get to the provisional versus final topic, can you sort of, I know the number changes each year, but how many death certificates are we talking about roughly each year?
We're talking about, in the most recent years, about 2.8 million deaths, 2.8 million deaths in a year.
Right. And so as the population grows, you're going to see more of a volume to go through.
Yeah, that's certainly what we've seen. I mean, not only has the population been growing, but the population has been aging somewhat. And of course, an aging population means more deaths as well, because older people are more likely to die. So yes, we have been seeing increases in the total number of deaths over time, even though in most instances, the death rate has come down.
Right. And the death rate is the number of deaths per a certain number of population. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, usually we, for mortality, we characterize it as deaths per 100,000.
You touched on provisional data. Could you walk us through what provisional death data is and then also explain what it is when the data are final?
So the provisional data allow us to see a picture, an incomplete picture of the situation with regard to mortality in a much more timely fashion. So when we provide data that are incomplete, we will call it provisional because it will change over time as more information comes in. We generally have to wait nearly a year after the end of the data year to have final data ready. Now, in contrast, we've already been releasing provisional data for 2020, but those data are incomplete and subject to change, but they do allow us to see a picture, albeit incomplete, of the situation with regard to mortality.
So then the final data are basically when 100% of the death certificates have been recorded and analyzed. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. Those data have been thoroughly checked and we've made any corrections that are needed, and we feel comfortable that these can form the basis of for official mortality statistics.
So what explains the lag time in the data and the different times that each year the data are released? Some years it comes out earlier and other years not as early.
You know, at the national level, we're only as fast as our slowest state. So we have to, wait to get this information in from the states because we want to have all deaths represented from all states. And there's quite a bit of variation in timeliness by state. And in cases where lengthy death investigations may be needed and jurisdictions may be strapped for resources, it may take several months to get the cause of death information. You know, some states, there are a few states that don't have electronic systems, and so they tend to be slower as well. And so we have to wait to get all of the information in. And if we have one really slow state, that may slow us down a bit. In addition, if we find significant problems with the data, when the data file, that may take some time as well. So normally we go back and forth with the state to make sure that we understand what the problems are and that they're corrected to the extent that we can correct them. And so if we identify significant problems, and this does happen sometimes, particularly as states are implementing electronic systems or maybe implementing new electronic systems, there tend to be bugs in the system, and we find issues, and those really have to be corrected because we want the data to be as accurate as possible. So when those things arise, that may cause us to adjust the release date for the final data. So we don't have a sort of a static release date where we release on the same day every year. It really depends on how long it takes to make sure that the data are as accurate as they can be.
So as far as the NCHS's analysis on death certificate data, NCHS does not go into all areas of analysis. Sometimes there's outside research done. Is there untapped information on the death certificate that could be useful for the public health community, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you're right that we don't publish on every item on the death certificate in our standard reports. There's some information there that we don't publish on. We do make the data file available, is a public use data file that has some limited information, and then there are some other files that require a research proposal and a data use agreement that have additional information. Those are made available to researchers, and researchers can do that. But one thing in particular that I'll mention that doesn't get a whole lot of attention, but should, is what we call the multiple cause data. Now, I talked about underlying cause information before, and your basic official national statistics are based on underlying cause. But the multiple cause information is important. You know, we record all of the causes that are reported on the death certificate. So we record that entire causal sequence that's reported. We also record any contributing conditions as well. And so there's a lot, I think, good information in those multiple cause fields that can be used. And one thing that we've just begun to start looking at in the last several years is the specific drug information, which is gleaned from that, from those multiple cause fields. The underlying cause may be, you know, a drug overdose due to, you know, heroin or whatever, but there may be, you know, multiple drugs reported. There may be some other information in there that can be useful in those multiple cause fields. And so that's something that we don't typically publish on. It gets quite complicated to just present a statistical picture based on multiple cause, but that could be very useful, I think, from a research standpoint.
So NCHS is the agency that ranks the leading causes of death in the country. And this is based on data from the death certificates. Could you tell us a little bit how NCHS goes about ranking leading causes of death?
Sure. Well, you know, we have a standard tabulation list that we use typically to present cause of death data. And the causes that are eligible to be ranked are determined by that cause list. So, you know, there's nothing sort of magical about leading causes of death. I mean, we decide which causes can be ranked, and then we rank them using that list. Other lists could be used, and other lists are used in different countries or on an international level for ranking. Rankings for the United States in comparison with other countries, for example, that may look a little bit different. But in the United States, we have a sort of standard process for ranking leading causes. And we try to keep that process as consistent over time as possible, because those rankings actually are used for planning and funding in those agencies responsible for doing that sort of thing.
Okay. And then another topic that NCHS is the source for is longevity or life expectancy in the U.S. How does the death certificate data help us learn about that?
Right. So, yeah, life expectancy information is derived from the death certificate data. Now, in this case, we don't need cause of death because we are only interested in whether people die or not. And so so the life expectancy is based on this information. And, what we do is we construct a life table based on all of the death certificates, and a life expectancy is derived from that table.
One more question here. What about future initiatives or modifications that might be in the works to build on what we have already in terms of information on the death certificate?
There are a couple of things that we've been working on, one of these involves improving timeliness. Now, we've seen dramatic improvements in timeliness over the last few years, but there's still more improvement that could be made, and that mainly involves development of electronic registration systems. These have had the biggest impact on timeliness in the past. And making these systems interoperable with other systems. For example, systems that involve electronic medical records or systems that involve medical examiner or coroner records. If we can make these systems talk to each other, we can get more timely information, because that information doesn't then have to be transferred manually from one system to another system. I mean, this can also help us with the quality of the data as well, which is another thing that we're really working on. If the physician, medical examiner, or coroner that has to certify the cause of death has information from the, let's say, the electronic health record at their fingertips, then they have better information on which to base the cause of death statement. So these are things that we're working on right now. And we hope to see further improvements in timeliness and improvements in the quality of the data as we move forward.
So to follow up on that, you had mentioned about the provisional data being incomplete. Is it possible then that in the future provisional data may be more complete or might provide more details?
That's the hope. Is that, if we can improve the timeliness of the data, that allows us to get a more complete picture in the provisional data in a more timely fashion. So it means that we can actually publish something sooner than we currently can. Now we have to wait until the data are complete enough to provide a picture. You know, it's sort of like putting together a puzzle. You know, when you get enough pieces in, you can kind of see what the puzzle looks like. But if you're still missing a lot, you may not be able to see that picture. So we have to continually put these pieces in until we have something that we can recognize. And then when we do that, then we can push that information out and publish it as provisional. And then when we get all the pieces in, of course, then the data become final. But the sooner we can get those pieces into the puzzle, the sooner we can show a picture of what's happening with regard to mortality in the country.
Thanks to Robert Anderson for joining us on this edition of StatCast.